Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Yes. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Sal will be joining us here in just a second, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. We're getting there. We're getting there, closer and closer to the game Saturday, a couple of days away. If you have any questions, comments, opinions, you want to get involved in some Bills talk, join us right now, 803-0550 or 888-550-2550. What's up, Sal Capaccio? Happy Thursday. How you holding out?
I'm good. I'm excited for tonight. I'm excited to get back watching Sabres hockey. Watching Taylor Hall. Excited for Max to be able to watch hockey. We watched last night. We watched a little bit. We watched the banner being raised in Tampa. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty, he was pretty captivated watching that. So that was pretty cool for me to see. It's going to be a really fun next, 72 plus hours, I guess.
Yeah. So I have
48 plus hours. Excuse me, 48. We're at Thursday now. Game's on Saturday. Sorry. Quick.
Don't make it longer. Yeah.
I have an inside baseball / behind the scenes question for you, because with fans at these games, and it's going to be 32, not crazy cold, but it'll be cold, and to be outside for that long, you can get cold. Any fan that goes can bundle up in big, huge jackets and gloves and everything, and you in the moat, dressed professionally / bundled up. What are your tricks of the trade? You have super Alaskan fleece-lined dress pants. How do you stay warm when you also have to kind of not be in a giant ball of Gore-Tex, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I got to stay warm and I got to be able to move, because I go from, I go up the stairs and over, and, I'm not on the field, but I'm still running sideline to sideline essentially, right? So yeah. One of the things I do is I wear, I guess you can call them sliders, spandex, underneath my pants. Like runners, spandex, I wear those long ones. I put those on and then I put my pants on basically. But so I'm wearing two layers there. That's what I do on the bottom half. And then the top half, Jared, basically, I bring extra layers with me. I don't want to be too restrictive, because what you have to remember is I got to get my mic out. I got to talk, things like that. I got to get my phone out for updates. I get texts about injuries and things like that during the game. So I got to be on there. And then even my gloves, I got to take my glove off to use my phone to read texts and things like that to make sure I'm, I got everything going. So there's a lot going on there that I can't be too restrictive. What I do is I generally decide before the game, what kind of weather it is. I've done this a long time enough, 30 degrees. Okay. A hoodie with a jacket over it should be pretty good. And then I'll bring extra layers with me and keep it in the press box. If I have to go and, change something like that. And then I wear boots. My feet will get really cold by the end of the game if I don't. A couple extra layers of socks, but the boots. I'd rather wear sneakers, but I've just learned my feet just get way too cold by the end of the game and they're frozen.
You ever do the hand warmers, but in the boots? Like, they've got toe.
Yeah, I've done that.
Throw those down there,
It's hard though, because the boots I wear, they're snug and tight, and the hand warmers won't go down there. They won't fit in there. But yes, I've done that. The boots I wear, my wife got me a really good pair of winter boots not too long ago, actually last year, and they've been great for this. So yeah. And then one thing I actually really do like to do, I think fans would be curious, because I love the ambiance so much, guys. So I wear one earbud, and I keep the other one free so I can hear the crowd. Nice. I only listen to Murph and Tasker in one ear because I want to hear the crowd. I look at other sideline reporters, and I've talked to people about this. A lot of them wear big headphones. You know, they wear two, they put two on, and they're always, you know, listening, and they want to keep the crowd noise out. I do not. I love to hear the crowd because I want to talk about it. I want to hear what's going on. If I hear something happening, I want to be able to react to that, and then I can use that on the broadcast as well.
Well, this week's crowd might have a little bit of a challenge to try to be as loud and as rowdy as last week's crowd, which all by all accounts was pretty good. The primetime atmosphere, maybe the next step in the process. I mean, so every once in a while, I just kind of sit around and think, like, wow, if they win this game Saturday, they're in the AFC Championship. And it's just, like, even thinking about that, even with their expectations coming into this year, it's just kind of wild to say it and to know that it is really so close for this group that has had they've had lofty goals all year.
Agreed. When you get to this point, if you win, I think that there's just this, when you're on the outside looking in, you're like, man, AFC Championship, NFC Championship, Final Four, whatever, however you want to term it, it's this incredible accomplishment and feat. Kind of when you're there, you don't realize you're there in a little ways because you're just winning and you're just playing. And it's kind of a routine that every week, I think you have to step back and say, hey, there's only four of these teams. This is the AFC Championship, right? I kind of remember that a little bit in that way, you know, when I was younger. I mean, the first AFC Championship the Bills went to, I was 15 years old, you know, and I was old enough then to understand. But even then, I don't think I understood, like, the gravity of this is the AFC Championship game, right? And then, you know, a couple years later, they go back, you know, they lose the next year. Then they go back again, and then they win. They go to the Super Bowl. But you're right, Jeremy. I think that, you know, if you get to the next round, like, man, what an incredible accomplishment that is. You know, it, win or lose, but of course, you're right there. You're knocking on the door, and you're literally, you're four quarters away from playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, the game on Saturday, however it goes, you remember playoff games pretty much forever. The way that people from the 90s talk about, oh, the game against the Chiefs, the Bronco game, this and that, you know, I don't remember all of those. I was too young for all those games, and this next generation of Bills fans, they're kind of building in memories that, I mean, no matter what happens in this game, especially if they win it, of course, you know, you get another one in the AFC Championship next week. You just kind of build up this this resume or whatever, this backlog of all-time games. And for the longest time, that was just missing for this group, for this team, yeah, for these fans. So it's just the gravity of it. It on Saturday, I don't know how I'll sleep Friday night. And Saturday morning, waking up, it'll be like counting down the minutes to this game.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about that is you remember it, and it's just so vivid. For anybody who lived through it, you know, that really was into the Bills, obviously, you know, I think that almost anybody can recall the years and the games. You know what I mean? It's even if you're a casual fan, you could say, no, I mean, it gets a little fuzzy when you're 30 years after. I get it. But I've talked to plenty of people who said, hey, remember in 92 when, you know, that happened or whatever, in 93? I could rattle off the playoff games, but, you know, I was into it and I was going to all the games and things like that. But even people, they remember, and you might get a little crazy on, oh, wait, did they play the Raiders in the second time they played the Raiders? Was that the championship or the divisional round or Kansas City or Denver? But you remember those games. And then the other thing is, there's always something about each game you remember. So what is last week's? What are we going to call last week's? Because we can call, there was the greatest comeback. You know, we can maybe think we could call the Carlton Bailey game and the Denver AFC Championship game, yeah, right? With a Ronnie Harmon drop in 89, the Derek Burrows game in 88, he got a penalty, which really hurt the Bills and allowed the Bengals to score. What are we calling last week's game?
That's a great question. Yeah.
Signature play, the Hail Mary? I don't
know. The Colts game.
No,
it's the only time
so.
They ever played the Colts, right? So, like, you call it the Colts game.
Yeah, how do you remember? What, is there a signature moment or something about the
know.
Game
That's
that you'd remember 20 years later? Other than, I mean, their first home playoff win in forever.
Maybe that's just it, right? Maybe
yeah,
it's
but,
just because
there were no
I'll
fans.
Be honest with you,
I mean, well, there are some fans.
In 88, they played the Oilers. They win the division. They play the Oilers at home. And there was nothing. I mean, the end of the game, there was a signature play, and that was Steve Tasker, of course, knocking a punt loose, and then it was recovered, and though the Bills won the game at the end of the game because of it. So maybe you remember that. But I don't think about that game and say the Steve Tasker, you know, punt game at the
end.
Yeah,
maybe right.
You know what that game was for me? First playoff game ever at that stadium. Like, that's what that was.
Yeah. I've got two options for this Colts game. If you're talking, like, in 20 years and you ask somebody,
yeah,
what do you remember
about
that
game? Right.
There are two things that the fumble that wasn't
Darrell
right?
Williams.
The,
yeah.
The,
Oh, that's a great one.
Oh,
right.
No, you're talking about the Colts. Yeah, the non-overturn. Right. Yes. That's right.
That's
a great one.
The non-overturn. It's that, or it might be Gabe Davis toe drags. Those plays were incredible.
Yeah. Because they were on the same drive, and what? One play separated the two throws or whatever. Yeah. They were pretty close together.
I think you could also maybe say the goal line stand game, the drive. You know, that was the turning point, the goal line stand and the drive, right? I mean, that maybe something like that stands out in the next 20 years. Like, wow, remember that goal line stand? Then Josh went down 96 yards, they score a touchdown, and that changed the game?
Well, thankfully they won, because if they didn't in 20 years, we know what the answer would have been. It would have been the Zach Pascal play. Yeah.
Oh, for 100%. Sure.
Yeah, it would have been, oh my Lord. Yeah, I don't even want to think about that. Sal, I know tomorrow we do more of a formal injury report, and actually the injury statuses will come out today, but concerned at all about the whole bunch of guys on the limited list for the Bills? Is anybody at risk at this point of not playing?
When I see limited a couple days in a row, I'm not generally as concerned, but, you know, we are at a Thursday now, and the game is on Saturday. And I would say, like, it would be individually for me here, which is Beasley and Diggs played last week. I'm not too concerned. It's the same injury, right? They both played.
Yep.
Tremaine Edmonds, 2 days in a row with a hamstring. Yeah, that piques my interest. Like, okay, what's going on there? Yeah, because he didn't – I think he finished the game, though, which is good. Like, I didn't see anything in the game. We never got an injury report in him. Now, Ed Oliver, I will tell you, I saw Ed Oliver what happened. When he got hurt, he came to the sidelines and he was bouncing. Like, he definitely was dealing with something, but it was never to the point of we got an official injury report. You know what I mean? Like, that's when it becomes like there's something going on there. But I could tell that something was bothering him when he came off the field at one point. I kept an eye on him, but it never really – it was late in the game, by the way, if I remember, which also could be why. Mm-hmm. And then Justin Zimmer as well. I guess what I'm telling you is none of these guys had any sort of significant injury that we knew of on Sunday, and they're all been limited. So I don't think there's too much to be concerned of, but of course you have to take it in consideration. Now, Daryl Johnson, on the other hand, 2 days in a row, not practicing with a knee injury, of course I think that's trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Baltimore is interesting now, right? Because they came out of the game against Tennessee. John Harbaugh was saying we're injury-free, but now they got Judon has not practiced, and Marcus Peters has not practiced. So two significant names not working out for them so far this week.
Yeah, this reads to me like a couple of guys they're being very precautionary with. But who knows? You know, when you're dealing with a back, or, you know, you don't know, you know, how severe his illness is. But to miss two practices with those things is, you know, it's concerning. I'm sure if you're a Ravens fan, you're a bit concerned. But after he said that, and then you see, like, okay, this is a veteran team, a veteran coach. You know, these guys are probably getting the maximum precaution here to make sure they're available. So it is for sure something to monitor today with both teams. As you mentioned, the final game status will come out for all of these players later today.
You know, a lot of talk this week and again tomorrow and going into the game about Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore running game, Dobbins, Edwards, you know, 190 rushing yards a game. How do you think the Bills' run defense has performed this season overall?
Inconsistent. Not great. I think they've been below average. But I think that there's been some times where they've been a lot better, and that's where the inconsistency, I mean, which is you've seen at times where they can be really good against the run. I don't think just they haven't been consistently good enough, and when they're not good, it seems like it comes in bunches. You know, it comes with a lot of yards, and you're like, man, they just can't stop anybody. But there have been times where they've been good. You know, I always think back to the stretch when they played against the Raiders and the Titans, and they stopped Derrick Henry for less than 60 yards.
Right.
And then
Josh
Jacobs. Thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
And Jacobs, same thing. I don't think he didn't have a really good day.
No,
you know, but they, so I think that when I think about them, I've always said early in the year, a lot of times I would say to you guys, and I talk about how if this team wants to focus on stopping one thing, it seems like they can do it. And in those games it was, let's stop the run. But then, you know, they opened themselves up to something else like Tennessee. Tannehill beat them getting outside. They gave up passes. I know Bills had some DBs down and things like that. Against the Chiefs, they said, we're going to take away the passing game. We're going to take away Tyreek Hill. He did nothing. He had 20 yards, but they ran against him. I think that the one thing that has been better about this defense, not the one thing, they've been a lot better overall as a defense, but at least it seems like they can defend both the run and the pass a little better together than they did earlier in the year, whereas earlier in the year it was one or the other. But I will tell you, I think the run defense still, to me, is always going to be a concern. Now, if I'm going to choose, though, to be inconsistent and below average against the run or the pass, I'm going to choose the run, of course. You can still, even if a team runs on you a lot, you can still, that's not a recipe to necessarily win the game. The Chiefs ran for 240 yards in the Bills. It was a one-score game late, you know, because running keeps the game close, essentially. I know they run for big plays. I know they can score the Baltimore Ravens. But I'd rather sacrifice giving yards on the ground and then buckling up in the red zone than I would a team throwing all over me, for sure.
It's interesting, too, you know, the whole defending Lamar. I know you've talked about your conversations with Lorenzo, and maybe that ties into your tweet yesterday, which was cool about how you're taught in high school and college one approach, and Lamar Jackson's a little bit different than the approach you're usually taught, right, in terms of running or how to defend guys like that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like necessarily Lamar necessarily, but I do think that there's something you said here. It might be more as you get up at the higher levels, because I will tell you, in college sometimes you're also taught to play it a little more fast. But in high school, at the lower levels, when you see option football, you're taught to slow play it, which is basically, hey, string the play out, just be where you are, don't move too much, just stand in your gap, shuffle your feet, move with the guy, make him wait until he has to make a decision, because by the time he does, you're going to get some reinforcements there, or you're going to get to the sideline or whatever. Then you get up to the college level, and it's the same thing in a lot of ways, but I do think that if you have better athletes, you know, it could be a big discrepancy there, right, in college. If you have better athletes, you could say, look, just go attack the guy, like you're going to get there, you're going to be better than him anyway. But with Lamar, I think one thing I noticed with the Bills last year was they didn't wait around. They attacked. And I think that's what you have to do. And I asked Micah Hyde about that yesterday too, and he said, play fast. And that's what I suspect. I think that the Bills, any team really, but the game plan is you don't do that. You don't stand there and shuffle your feet and wait, because that gives Lamar Jackson a chance to make a move on you and he's gone. You attack him. Now look, attacking him, you can look foolish. Matt Milano had a play last year where Lamar, you know, faked him out really well. People remember it. And Matt Milano's a really good football player. That happens to people. But the difference is, if you do that, that might happen once in a while. But at least you're forcing him to do something. If you attack him, he has to make a decision. Am I going right? Am I going left? Am I going to hand off? Am I going to pitch? And if you especially attack when he's running some sort of option in the backfield, you might even be able to get close enough to the mesh point sometimes to really screw things up. You know what I mean? And I think that's the thing I really noticed last year when they played against Lamar, which was guys were just attacking him. As soon as they read what he was doing, they went. They did not allow for him to make a move.
You mentioned Milano. I think I wanted to ask you about him. So since you mentioned, I'll go to that question. And we know how important he is. I mean, every down linebacker, coverage guy, helping out against Lamar, all this other stuff. Maybe he's matched up against Mark Andrews. Do you think Milano is now at 100%? I mean, do you think he is at the top of his game again?
I don't know if I'd say that. I think that there was some coverage issues last week, right, where he was trailing a little bit. Now, I give the Colts a lot of credit for their scheme last week, and they have good players, and Phillip Rivers was on point. He threw a couple balls that there was very good coverage, whoever it was, you know, and Phillip Rivers made a really nice play. I think that he's running again, and it looks like he's out there moving around like 100%. But, you know, he did miss quite some time, and maybe there's some things in there he has to clean up as far as, you know, getting back to his eyes and game speed and things like that. So, yeah, I think overall he's probably playing like that. But I was a little concerned last week about some of the coverage issues and breakdowns, which wasn't just on him. Again, I give the Colts a lot of credit for what they did. But I think he's a really important player this week because they're going to use their tight ends. And a lot of times that is Matt Milano who has to be in that coverage situation.
All right, Mr. C, I'm hanging in there. I just need, you know, if you could move up the game time, that'd be nice if you could make it tomorrow. Just call your people that you know in the league office when you get a chance.
Yeah, I mean, even Saturday, like what do you do, right?
8:15, yeah. Noon kick would be cool if you don't mind. And by the way, tell them to practice outside because I need some dancing videos this week. You know, I need to see that they're still nice and loose. MC Hammer, I don't care who it is, but I need some videos from practice.
Well, that was the Thursday practice last week. That could be again today.
Let's do it. Loosen up for the game. So just tell them.
Does it?
That.
You're gonna do some.
I get my hammer pants out. Yeah, they're home. I don't like to bring them into work. I hate to brag about my dancing ability.
Your parachute pants, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got parachute shirts. Might as well have parachute pants. We will talk to you tomorrow morning for Football Friday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Sal.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
For a tax
your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.